Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Neil Reynolds podcast. I am Neil Reynolds. I'm going to be your host for this new venture. This is a chance for me to meet so many great people around the NFL, players, coaches, media members, former players, and to hear their stories. The NFL is filled with great stories. That's what this podcast is all about. Normally I'll be in a studio, but today I am driving the streets of sunny Tampa, Florida. We are on our way to meet our special guest for episode number one. You'll guess who it is when I tell you it's time for a little bit of Fitzmagic. I'd hope if you're an NFL fan in the UK, you'll know me as the anchor of Sky Sports television coverage, but I'm hoping to pick up listeners from the US as well. So if you don't know me, I work on TV here in the UK. I've covered the NFL since 1991. I've also worked for BBC Radio. I've written for a whole bunch of different publications and websites, currently write for NFL.com. For the official Super Bowl game program in the US, and I edit the London game programs over here in the UK. So I wanted to kick off this podcast with a special guest and a real character. And I wanted to show you some of the access that we might be able to bring in this podcast and take you behind the scenes. So in January 2019, I met Ryan Fitzpatrick. We went on a UK stage show tour, the NFL UK live tour around the United Kingdom. And it became apparent very quickly that Fitz is just popular wherever he goes. He stole the show. He was fantastic. So I reached out to him when I was launching this podcast, and he invited me out to his home in Tampa Bay. And it was a really memorable day. It was a fun day. It was a day when we could have had a real blast, even if we didn't have recording equipment there. We did an interview by the side of the water in Tampa Bay, but first, Fitz took me out onto the water. I've never fished in all my life. Never even held a fishing rod, never caught a fish, never held a fish. So that's where we started. I was given an introduction to fishing, and my teacher was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Okay, so will you touch a shrimp then? A live shrimp?
Oh, they're alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, go on then. Can't really say no, can I?
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, man. See, now we got action. Now they're all excited for you.
Okay.
So grab the pole on your right behind you.
As someone who spends an entire career among 300-pound testosterone-filled animals,
yeah,
how much of a disappointment am I to you right now?
No, I love this. I love every minute of this. See, this
is all about
stepping outside your comfort zone. I'm going to put the first one on. These things are pretty squirmy, and they've got a horn right here that'll poke the bejesus out of you. Okay.
Good to know.
So there's a dark spot right there. That's their brain.
Yeah.
So somewhere in between their brain and their eyes, behind that horn, we're going to hook it.
Okay.
So I'm going to put it on the hook right there like that. He starts moving around a little bit.
This is gross.
Gross, yeah. So then you, now that you know how to cast,
yep,
you're going to cast it somewhere, hopefully under or near that dock.
All right.
Okay.
I like the way you're preaching accuracy there. Is that right?
Is that okay? Yeah, that's good.
Am I going to do it right over your head?
Let me...
Confident?
Push you a little
bit confident?
Closer.
Yeah, you don't have... Oh, right. Famous last word.
Okay. Not bad. Not bad.
You lie. That was not terrible. That was awful.
So if you could close it and reel that sucker in.
Well, have I got one already?
That's probably the shrimp pulling at you.
Right, that's why that's doing something now.
Yeah, you got one on.
Right.
Okay, so grab the rod.
Oh crap!
We got fish on.
All right.
Okay. Hold it in your right hand. Hold the thing. You're gonna reel in with your left hand.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Which way?
Bring it towards you. Other way. Yeah, that way. Yeah. And then hold your right hand a little higher so you got a better leverage on it. Yep. Okay, now reel that sucker in. And most of the fish here have teeth, so...
Right, I was going to say, this might be a point to mention. I actually don't like fish. I don't swim in the sea for a reason. So
I'm coming.
I might need you in a minute.
I'm coming.
Because if I see this fish, I'm probably going to freak out. Whoa.
You're good. You're good. Keep going. Keep reeling that sucker in.
Jeez. Where's it gone?
It's going under me.
Right.
This is where we might lose
textbook?
Our
equipment. Is this textbook fishing?
This is incredible.
Right, this feels like it's about... Oh, now it's... Oh, it's still there.
Well, there it is.
Whoa! Oh, right, Fitz, I might swear because I hate fish. Oh, right, help.
Okay, you're good. Okay, this. Oh, yeah, beautiful. That's a Jack Crevalle. Okay, stop reeling. Beautiful. I need to get.
Am I allowed to put it back?
Oh yeah, we'll put this one back. These are fun to catch. That's a good fight.
Is that him making that noise?
Yeah.
Where am I going?
Just hold on tight, because I... What do you think?
That's pretty scary, actually.
How long has he got? We're going to name him.
I'm going to call him Nemo, and there's probably copyright issues. Fitz doesn't normally throw him back, like he can't get... Do you want to put it back in the water for a minute?
You have a blue thing sitting.
So I put him back in for a minute.
The little blue handle. Yeah, it might be on the other side.
How long can he hold his breath for?
Yeah, he's okay. You want to kiss him or name him or no?
Yeah, I've called him Nemo.
Nemo, okay.
There's a whole bunch of copyright issues there, but we'll deal with that.
How cool was that?
That was cool. I was actually genuinely scared. That's pathetic.
So that's a fun one to catch because it's a good fight. So like that thing was
right. Because it wasn't that big.
No, but it was tugging pretty
really,
good, right?
I felt like it was going to be like Free Willy or something coming up on the other.
So,
well, Fitz, I think we should call it a day. That has been a lot of fun.
Very successful.
Thank you.
You can call yourself a fisherman now.
Oh, I don't know about that, but it's been fun anyway. I got one. I can never take that away from me, right?
So after we finished fishing, we sat and had a chat by the water's edge in Tampa Bay, and I started by asking Fitz about his family life growing up.
Loved football from when I was little, but we were an athletic family, house full of testosterone, basically. I had three brothers and two older, one younger, and everything was a competition, whether it was what we were eating that night, the weigh-in pre and post Thanksgiving meal was a big competition for us. But did everything growing up. We did triathlons, we swam, soccer, football, basketball, baseball, and football just happened to be the sport I was best at.
So did you have a favorite team, favorite players growing up, anything like that?
Yeah, so I loved the Rams growing up. Okay. And I loved back then the Phoenix Cardinals, and Arizona State, which was the college that both my parents went to. We went to all those games growing up. So those were kind of the three teams at those two levels that I rooted for.
When did you, as you were going through high school, when did you realize that college football was going to be an option? And how did you end up at Harvard? Because so many players who make it to the NFL, don't go that route to Harvard, right?
Yeah, and so the way that the recruiting process over here, at least back then, I just got a bunch of letters in the mail, and it was like, wow, you know, I may have a shot at doing this, at playing football in college. And then when it was really time, not just for the letters to come in the mail, but for teams to start offering scholarships or schools to start offering scholarships, I didn't get any. And so, finally, a 1AA, which is a lower tier school, came in and offered me a scholarship. That was Eastern Washington. But when I didn't get any offers from bigger schools, I decided I'm going to try to go to the best school I can, because it's not really about football. It's about my education and what I want to do after college.
And was your dad a rocket scientist? Or is that a newspaper story? Because, sometimes I interview many NFL players, and they say, what was that guy like? I'm like, well, he was great guy, but he was no rocket scientist. But you might be the closest thing to it if that story is true.
Yeah, my dad loves telling people that he works with rocket scientists. And so by association, I think he considers himself one. But yeah, he's in the missile defense industry.
Okay. Wow.
Pretty. And my brother, too. My brother and my dad work at the same company, and it's pretty neat. They do some cool stuff.
So obviously a smart family. We know I'm going to ask you about your score at the Wonderlic test soon. That was something that was made big deal when you entered the NFL. But going to Harvard, they always say when you're a student athlete, balancing football or athletics with your schoolwork, that must be on another level when you're at an Ivy League school, though, right?
Yeah, that was something I really had to learn. You just kind of get thrown into the fire, and you really got to figure out how to manage your time. Mm. So I'm glad I didn't meet my now wife until junior year, because that would have been even tougher balancing that as well. Mm. But, yeah, you learn from very early when you're there how to figure everything out, because it's tough.
So you met your wife at Harvard. She was a soccer player, right?
Yeah.
And you were tremendously romantic when you decided to make her your wife. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just a McDonald's, but it was a McDonald's connected to a gas station.
What were you thinking? Why did you propose at a McDonald's attached to a gas station?
I was trying to be more romantic than that, but the short version of it is we were on our way home. There was some charge that happened on our card. She was going to check the bank statement, and I bought a ring on the bank statement earlier that week, so I was a little nervous about it. Luckily, the hiding spot for the ring was in my car, which probably wasn't a good idea looking back on it. And I told her, "Hey, why don't we sit at the sit at the park or by the lake, or let's go to a fancy steakhouse?" And she was like, "It's November. Why would we do that?" Or, "No, I want McDonald's. I don't." So I was like, "Okay, we'll go to McDonald's." And
you asked for this.
She asked for it. She got it, and we've lived happily ever after.
Hey, it worked out. It certainly worked out. What was the level of play like at Harvard? I know when we did our NFL UK live tours, you said sometimes you were playing quite low crowds. So that to go from that to the NFL must have been quite a jump. What was that level like?
Yeah, the crowds, there's in Texas, especially over here, some of those crowds are a lot bigger than the ones I played in front of in college for high school even.
Yeah.
But that was a huge difference and step up. But it was even the TV timeouts. That was such a difference in the NFL game. Why are we stopping the flow of the game right here? But the guys that I were playing with were on an equal playing field, the guys I were playing against. So as a quarterback, it was still – you're still fitting it in the same types of windows. And so when I got to the NFL, I was blown away by the talent that I was playing against, but really blown away by the guys I was throwing to as well.
Is the trash talking different in the Ivy League? Is it kind of like your hedge fund investment sucks? Well, I mean, what's it like on that level?
Yeah, it is. The safety school is a big chant. My senior year, Yale had a fake Harvard cheer squad in the Harvard section. My parents were up there as well. And during the third quarter, everybody held up signs, and they told everybody it was going to say, "Go Harvard," or whatever. And it said, "We suck." And I was on the field like, "Wow, this is really cool," because I couldn't tell what it had to say. And all the Yale people on the other side were laughing. So they put
some thought into it, at least.
Those are the kind of pranks and trash talking that happens on the Ivy League level.
You mentioned your parents then. And I read a story saying you used to walk the field in college before every game with your parents. Was that a big thing? What sort of things were you talking about then? And how did they feel about having a son playing quarterback? Because obviously there's a lot of – it's like you're wearing a target sometimes.
Yeah, well – so my younger brother was playing in high school the same time I was playing in college, and so he would play on Friday nights. And a lot of the time my dad would watch his game, hop on a red eye, fly across country from Arizona to Massachusetts. And then, he'd sneak into my dorm room, take a shower, maybe get an hour of sleep, and then come very disheveled and walk out with me as we went to the field. So that was a lot of what that was, and it was just – it was really neat, especially now as a parent and father, just the sacrifices that he had to make and the fact that he wasn't going to miss anything was pretty neat.
How did they feel about you playing quarterback? I watch as a parent. My son plays quarterback in the UK, and sometimes you just watch through, with the hands over your eyes. I mean, how were they with it, and how would you be if your
always wanted to be quarterback.
Definitely more difficult for my mom in the sense of getting hit. Yeah. You know, she's always, but she's seen it so much. I've been doing it for so long, and usually I get up. Right. So I think she's okay, but she'll always, you know, call me after the games. Are you okay? Boy, that one looked like it really hurt. I can't believe I didn't throw a flag. You know, it's always that kind of stuff.
Even now.
Even now. Yeah, yeah. Even now. And I think my dad more so constantly looking at the stats and where I am and how I rank and that kind of thing. But my two oldest boys both play tackle football, and neither of them are quarterbacks right now, but I would love for them eventually to start playing quarterback, but I enjoy watching them play.
So ahead of the 2005 NFL draft, like many prospects, Fitz was tested for his mental aptitude. He took the Wonderlic test. There were reports that he got 50 out of 50, but he actually scored a 48 out of 50, confirming his intelligence as a quarterback and as a man coming out of Harvard.
Well, you've been around me enough now. You could probably answer that one. I don't think you're very impressed, you know.
I think you're smart. I think you put a comic facade on top of it. Is that fair?
But the draft is funny because, you know, we have all-star games. So it's the East-West game. It's the Senior Bowl. It's the Hula Bowl. I didn't get invited to the Senior Bowl, but I got invited to the East-West game. And all these guys have stopped going to school, and they put all their focus into preparing for the draft. And, well, when I was there, I still was in school. And so I actually had to play in the game, get on a bus by myself immediately after the game, and go take an exam proctored by an ex-Harvard coach in the hotel room. So I had a few different things I had to worry about leading up to the draft.
Did you expect to be drafted higher than your seventh round draft pick to the Rams? Were you just happy to be drafted, or did you put that chip on your shoulder then?
I was just happy to be drafted. Yeah. And the one thing I told my parents, we're not doing a draft party because I don't know what's going to happen. And back then it was just 2 days of draft. And so day one, rounds 1, 2, and 3, I think, happened. Day 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, we're getting into round 5 and people start showing up. My dad has invited everybody because he knows I'm getting drafted. And we're halfway through the 7th round. And I've got 40 people in my living room.
Ouch.
And that's a little embarrassing, yeah. Right? I mean, the names keep flying by, and I will never forget Matt Castle got drafted by New England. I had just worked out with New England. I was excited about the prospect of going there. Never heard of Matt Castle. He was the backup, never played a snap, I don't think, at USC. So at that point, I knew I wasn't getting drafted. Went into the back room, you know, embarrassed.
Yeah.
And then, I got drafted 5th from the last pick in the 7th round.
Wow. And then was the party on then?
Then the party was on. Then I was happy that my parents invited everybody. And so they were off the hook after that.
Yeah. And you had quite an interesting welcome to the NFL, working with Mike Martz, who would sometimes not make things that easy on a rookie. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. And I think the Harvard tag that went with me coming in, every time I screwed something up,
He loved it.
It was not good. He loved it. He loved doing it. He'd give me half the play call and mumble the rest, and I would just feel like such a dummy because I'd be in the huddle with Orlando Pace and Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Marshall Faulk and Steven Jackson, and they're all looking at me, and I can't call a play, and I'm getting kicked out, and, you know, I'm 4th string, then I'm 5th string, then I'm back to 3rd, and it was just – he just wanted to see if I could handle it, and I'm very thankful that I had to go through that process.
Let me list the teams then. I'm sure most of your fans will know it, but you played for the Rams for 2 seasons, the Cincinnati Bengals for 2 seasons, Buffalo for 4 years, Tennessee in 2013, Houston 2014, the Jets for 2 seasons, Tampa Bay for 2 seasons, and now Miami last season, 2019. Just going back to the Jets, you were interviewed on the stage at Trafalgar Square in a fan rally. Do you remember anything about that? Do you know who interviewed you?
Was that you? No, it wasn't you, was it?
Honestly, it meant a lot to me. That's why I thought I'd just bring it up.
I am so. You've never brought that up before. So did you not remember that?
No, I knew it. I just saved it. The beard was a little thinner then, but it was definitely me. Well, I didn't have one, and you had one, but not like it is now.
Well, I remember you having more hair. Is it?
Ouch, no, that was you have to go way back further than 2015, Fitz. Come on. But yeah, that was me.
I do remember that
somebody interviewing
somebody, but yeah,
didn't leave much of an impression.
I'm glad that we met in 2015. 15.
There we go. Just that was the first time. Buffalo, you said that was a special place to play. Why?
The fan base there is very unique. I mean, they live for that football team, and I think that's a lot of it. There are a lot of passionate fans in the NFL, but Buffalo in particular, not being in a huge city, just with everything, you know, in the history and everything that they've gone through, it's a very unique place to play because they love their Bills so much.
And luckily you're getting ready to play the games. You're nowhere near the tailgate party, but that looks just ridiculous, some of the stuff they do. Covered in ketchup, mustard, they're throwing themselves on tables. I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'm proud to call some of those people neighbors and friends. But it is funny
just seeing your barbecue.
Hearing about somebody doing that and then watching them drop their kid off at preschool the next day. Yeah.
So as a player who has turned out for 8 NFL teams, there's a lot of packing up and moving for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and we talked about what impact that has on the life of his family.
Well, the first time we had to do it, my oldest son was 6 months old, and I got traded from St. Louis to Cincinnati. And so I got called into the coach's office, who was Scott Linehan at the time. He told me I had been traded, so I was walking out to my car. I call my wife. She says, hello. I say, hey, we just got traded. And the GM pokes me on the shoulder and stops me. I hang up the phone immediately to talk to him just to say whatever, but I didn't tell my wife where we got traded to. So it was the longest 5 minutes of her life.
Yeah, wondering where
are we going, where are we with a newborn and everything. But every place we've gone, my wife has been the leader and just – treating it as a new adventure, and that's trickled down to all of our kids, and it's been a lot of fun. I really wouldn't change it for anything because we've met so many great people in the places that we've lived, and I think it's, you know, our kids have had a fun time doing it as well.
So I had another sort of two-part follow-up. So no guilt when you come home sometimes and we're moving again. You've never kind of felt that?
Well, I don't like moving. I know how difficult it is, and every other year when we have another kid.
And they get their friends at school. And
stuff. Yeah, it's not even that part. It's more because I know in the long run I think it will be good for them having to make new friends and go different places. My oldest has been great with it, and so like, that kind of trickles down to the other kids as well. But sometimes just having to hit reset, you know, my wife making great friends, us being comfortable with school and sports and every year, every other year having to hit reset, that is a little bit hard, but I try not to think about it in that way. I try to think about it like my wife does, as an adventure. Mm-hmm. And in that way, and looking at it with that perspective, it just changes things a little bit.
You must be incredibly close as a family then, because that's the one constant that you, when you move and schools change and soccer teams your kids play for change and their friends might change, but you guys have to kind of stay together. So you must be incredibly close because of that.
Yeah, we are, and that's a great point. Every time we move and we have to hit, you know, restart, we're all we have. You right. know, we get to a new place, and the kids just know each other until they branch off and make friends. And so walking into a new school with your siblings is a little bit easier than walking to a new school by yourself. But they're a really close unit, and, you know, we do have a lot of fun. We live life to the fullest.
That's good stuff. Well, yeah, I've already seen in your, you know, in your garage, and we're out here on the waterfront, and you have every toy that you need to have a great childhood and a great life. There's a professional impact as well of moving, of course. You walk into a new locker room, you meet new teammates. I guess for you as a quarterback, learning the playbook, because they can talk about it being a different language. Go back to you being a smart guy, you probably pick up that playbook pretty easily. But how has that been every time you've gone somewhere new?
I think the playbook is not that big of a deal in that when you've been in a few of them, you just try to – they all kind of blend together a little bit and you figure it out. But it's the relationships. You know, it's having to – especially as a quarterback and really having to get to know guys and what makes them tick and how to get them to, you know, respond or play better sometimes. Having to pick up and do that and figure it out in an off season – and have one season to do that or two seasons to do that sometimes is really difficult. But, you know, something that I've had to do over and over and over in my career, and part of it for me is going in, just being myself, you know, not being shy and going to a new place, but walking in with confidence and letting everybody know who I am. And I've really had a great time, you know, every place I've been, you know, the locker room kind of is the guys and what they're made of and the discussions you have, and I've had a great time everywhere I've been.
Do you find you gravitate towards the offensive linemen? Do you close with a lot of linemen over the years, do you think?
Yeah, I think that my closest friends, you know, they're sprinkled around, but if you had the majority probably offensive linemen, the quarterback-center relationship I've found is always a very special one.
Yep.
For lots of reasons. But
your hand goes in places where you got to be close friends, right?
Yeah, we've got physical relationships. We've got the mental side of it. But everywhere I've been, I've made some great friends. And, you know, a lot of usually they're on offense just because we spend so much time together. Mm. And then when you condense that down, the amount of time we spend with the offensive line is probably even more than any other group. So, but it's been awesome. And most of the guys on my phone are now done and retired. Right. So, you know, I feel like the really old guy, but they're all cheering me on, wanting me to still play. So
I get the feeling as I go through this podcast and I'm interviewing current players and former players, it won't be about yards and touchdowns. It will be about those relationships. I think that's what, over the years when I've interviewed players, they talk about that. It's about the locker room. It's about being with the guys. So I think that's going to be a theme, throughout the NFL. But what are you like in the locker room? Are you a prankster? Do you play jokes on other players?
I'm definitely lighthearted. I'm not, you know, I learned at an early age, you never prank a special teams guy because the specialists, they have all day.
You're too much time.
We're in meetings all day. They've got all day just to tool around. But I like to have fun. I like to keep it light. But I always like to just be there for people to be an ear if somebody needs to talk to me, because I've been in a lot of different situations, and whether it's professionally or personally, there's a lot of things that I've kind of been through and experiences that I've had that guys will lean on me for stuff like that.
As I mentioned earlier, Fitz has been a fan favorite wherever he's played. Just a cult hero, almost. Just a man who appeals to the masses. I've seen that firsthand when I was doing the stage shows with him. This is a player who has been much loved throughout his NFL career.
I think part of it is because, especially for the 30 to 45-year-old male crowd, I kind of look like them. And maybe move around like them a little bit. So they're like, wow, how is this guy out there doing that and taking those hits and making those throws? Because he looks like me.
Right. So that's really interesting you say that. I sometimes say this in a disparaging way, but this, I promise you, is not a disparaging way. So sometimes you say somebody looks like they've won a competition to be an NFL quarterback. And you might mean that in terms of how they throw, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about sucking every ounce of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Never sliding, always just putting your shoulder down and trying to run for the end zone or a first down. It's like you've realized you've won a competition and been handed something. I mean that in a good way, not a disparaging way.
Oh, and I think that's very true. And I think part of it for me too, and just everywhere I've been, gaining perspective of, I don't know how long I'm going to be out there. I don't know if this play is my last, this game is my last, this season is my last season. I don't know. I mean, even if you look back to last season, I played the first few games, then I got put on the bench. Then I got put back in, and it was like, for me, especially now in my career, like, what do I have to lose, you know? And then the other part of it, as I've gotten older, my kids are now getting to the age where they watch Dad, you know, and I've got a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, like, they watch everything that I do. And so if I'm going to sit there and complain to them about their attitude and hanging their head and doing different things in sports, they better not see me do it. So I try to put a smile on my face at all times.
So it's a lot of being a quarterback or being an NFL player, handling those highs and lows. So you might be starting and having those back-to-back 400-yard games for the Bucs, then you're back on the bench. You're starting for the Dolphins, you're back on the bench. You throw a touchdown pass against Washington with 6 seconds left to Devontae Parker, but the two-pointer fails. So it's a roller coaster. Is that a key across 15 years to try and find some middle ground in all of that?
It is, and I've always been level-headed. I think that's a quality that most quarterbacks have, or at least most quarterbacks need. It's something that's really important because of what you said, because of the adversity that you're going to face. And there's a lot of pressure from the outside world too, you know, and so not buying in to all of that and not reading all the articles, and that stuff plays into it too, because it's a tough profession. Every year there's only one team that wins, so there's 31 people that failed, 31 teams that failed, and you just got to keep with it. And for me, it's always been about maintaining confidence in myself.
So we talked for about 3 or 4 minutes there about why you're a fan favorite, but really it's the beard, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't even...
It helps.
The people in St. Louis and Cincinnati probably don't even remember me because I didn't have a beard back then. So really, it probably started with Buffalo. But I was a fan favorite in 2015 with the Jets. But 2016, I don't think I was much of a fan favorite.
Still sticking stuff in the beard?
No more baby carrots after you got me with that zinger. But yeah, every now and again, we'll throw something in there for good fun.
Let's just go back to the Dolphins season, the most recent, well, actually the last two seasons, because, again, you had quite a few records over those last two seasons. Do you feel like you've, and maybe with athletes, there's that kind of sweet spot where you have all the experience, but you're still athletic enough to take advantage of it? Do you feel like the last 2 years have been your best 2 years, and do you feel like there's a kind of sweet spot you've reached?
Yeah, the last few years I've said it, I truly think I'm getting better and better, and, you know, especially at the quarterback position, I think it's one lately that a lot of guys have shown, you know, you can play up to or into your 40s a little bit, and physically, you know, I'm fine. I've never been a guy that's, you know, going to run for 1,000 yards.
Well, you say that. You're the leading rusher on the Miami Dolphins. You know, Lamar There's Jackson, enough. Ryan Fitzpatrick.
There's enough there to get away, you know, sometimes. But it's our position is so much about the mental and so much about the timing aspects and the experience of it. And so I just from the different teams I've been on, the different systems I've been in, you pick something up and you take it with you kind of from every place and every year. And I think that, as really that experience that I've gained has really helped me out as I've aged.
You did change the fortunes of the Dolphins last year, because at the start it was all about this team is tanking for Tua. That was the whole thing. And I know you guys in the locker room heard that. And I think you said it, I saw somewhere you said that it wasn't almost about X's and O's when you got back in as a starter. It was all that other stuff, the emotional stuff, the energy, the atmosphere. Was that a big thing that helped turn that team around?
It was. And I think we were so young. We had so many inexperienced guys that this was maybe their first taste of the NFL, and they didn't know how it was supposed to be or how it was supposed to go. And so when we put aside, you know, the introductions of meeting the new players that were there week one, week two, week three, and actually just focused on us and focused on going out there and having fun and flying around, I think that really helped us. And, you know, sitting at 0-7, I had the experience of sitting at 0-7 when I was in Cincinnati. So, crazy enough, I could draw on that experience where that year we finished 4-3-1 in Cincinnati, and really that springboarded us into the next year, even though I wasn't part of that team. Same thing in Miami. I mean, to finish the season the way that we did, the energy in the building, the way that we fought through it, the adversity that we did, that's only going to help in the upcoming season.
We're sitting here on the edge of the water. Is that the Tampa Bay? Is it? Do you say the Tampa Bay? Tampa Bay?
Yeah, Tampa Bay.
Yeah. So we're sitting here on the edge of the water. It's really quiet. Is that important to you to get? Because so much you're talked about so much as an NFL quarterback. Is this an important time for you to come and be out of the spotlight, not have 70,000 people screaming or booing whenever you're on the field?
Yeah, it is, and it is an important time for me just to be dad as well. You know, I'm coaching my girls in basketball, coaching my boys in basketball, doing some stuff with baseball and football. And so that part of it is so much fun for me, to be able to go to the chorus concerts and just be a dad, you know, to go to the band concerts. And then, of course, for me here, night fishing, going out at about 10 or 11 at night and fishing some of these docks with nobody out here and no airplanes flying overhead and no noise, just under the stars, that's a really relaxing time for me.
What are you like as a spectator when you're watching your kids play? Are you pretty laid back, or do you get quite intense?
I'm very, very laid back. Sometimes I got to pull my wife back in a little bit. She's pretty intense, but I usually don't say much unless I'm the actual coach.
So it's good to have that kind of time away from the game and to detox, if you will. What's it like each year prepping for the next season? Do you find that hard?
No, I mean, I find it... I find it easy when I'm not in the building, when we're not doing our OTAs and mini camps and then going through training camp in the season. When I get away from that building, it's very easy for me to turn it off and to truly be, you know, dad and try to be a good husband and a good brother and a good son and all that. But as soon as we step back into that building, especially in the off season, that's the hard part for me, where it's juggling dad and going to Miami and flying back to Tampa and, right, you know, that part of it. And then once I get into the season, I've got to focus on what I got to do to be successful on the field. And unfortunately, you know, the dad part of it, I'm there, but I'm not as much. And that's where my wife picks up the slack for me a little bit.
Of course, you got to work off that birthday cake as well, right?
Always.
That was the thing last year, wasn't it?
Well, we are in the middle. So we had three birthdays in January. We're about to have our third in 10 days in March. And so I found that the key is for my wife to make flavors and icings and frostings that I don't particularly care for, so that I'm not tempted to eat them. So I'm trying to lay off it a little bit this year.
Just such a dedicated athlete.
Something like that, yeah.
15 years in the NFL then for Ryan Fitzpatrick across 8 teams, as we've already mentioned. But does he think about life after football?
You know, I try not to. I try to just put all my energy and focus on being a football player when it is, you know, when I'm still active in my career. But the last few years, it creeps into the back of my mind. What am I going to do? And I've been having a lot of conversations with guys, you know, most of the guys my age are now done playing. So a lot of conversations with what they're doing and, you know, how they did the transition. And, you know, for me, I've got 7 kids. So that being dad and a more active role in that is going to be part of it. But I'm not sure yet.
At least you're not going to be quiet, are you? You're still going to be busy with all the kids.
Yeah,
and
whatever road I take, I'm definitely still going to be busy and the house is going to be chaos.
Do you think you'll miss it when you step away from playing? Or do you think by then you will have emptied the tank, if you will?
I think that I'll miss it. It's something that's come up the last few years. Like, am I done or am I not? And every time I step on that field, there is – and you could see, like, when I score a touchdown or throw – I mean, there is a high that I get on that field. I've never – done drugs, but I'm assuming that's what it's like. Like, there's a high that I get on the football field that I just can't get in any other aspect of my life, and that's what keeps me coming back for more.
Yeah, as they say, you'll be a long time retired. Yeah. That's what they say. But yeah, you do have that high. I just think of the game against the Patriots in week 17, and you, again, I go back to it, you like a fan, you celebrate like a fan. You put who did you put on your back and carry him off the field?
That was Walt. Right. Walt Akins. He got hurt during the game, so he was hobbling off.
So it was a service. You were providing a service.
Yeah, he was limping into the locker room, so I wanted him to hurry on up with me.
What about toughest, if there was a defender or somebody like that, toughest player that you've played against over the years you've played? I know that's a hard one sometimes, because when you face so many and you try and pluck one out. But
yeah, the one that just entered my mind when you had said that was Troy Polamalu. And he was, I just saw him at the Super Bowl, and his hair is still beautiful. But, you know, he was so difficult, because as a quarterback, you have so many keys that you're trying to read before the snap, and the safety and the safeties are definitely two that you're always looking at. And he was so difficult to figure out, you know, why he had no rhyme or reason sometimes for where he'd be, but he'd always get to the right spot after the snap. And he always was one to make you think, and he'd guess a lot and guess right.
And toughest place to play?
Loudest venues, Seattle is always talked about. Kansas City is always talked about. I've never had a great time in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's always been tough for me personally. But there's a lot of great stadiums now. I am more so a fan of the old school, you know, the Lambeau.
Right.
You know, the stadium in Buffalo. I like the ones that have a little more nostalgia to them.
And last one, obviously 15 years in the NFL. Can you remember who your first touchdown pass was? I this is not a trivia question, because I can't.
Yeah, Torrey Holt. I just saw Torrey Holt at the Super Bowl, and we reminisced about it a little bit. But it was just so funny, because I went up to Torrey, I think the Monday after the game. I got the ball, and first touchdown pass, Torrey, do you mind signing it? And he wrote, best wishes, Torrey Holt, like I was a fan instead of the guy that threw him the ball. So I still have it, but best wishes, Torrey Holt, number 81.
See, goes back to man who won a competition. Yeah. You got Torrey Holt football as a prize.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first interview in the bag then with Ryan Fitzpatrick. We're going to have to go some to beat that one in the coming weeks and months, but we're certainly going to try. That was a really fun day in Tampa Bay. Want to just finish off this week's podcast, episode one, with a few of your questions. We'll take a couple of questions in the mailbag every time we have an episode. And producer Gary Hayes, you got the first one?
I have. Thank you very much for having me on, Neil. So what I wanted to ask is, I know there's going to be more NFL questions throughout the year, but my first question to you was, have you recovered after being on the walk with Fitz? Because you were very scared that day. You were nervous.
Oh, my goodness. I embarrassed myself. I mean, I like the idea of fishing and I like swimming and seeing fish, but I just don't want to touch them. I just don't want to be near them. So, yeah, Fitz was offering for me to bait the hook as it is and hold these live shrimp. And then he offered to let me hold the fish that I caught. And I was just, I don't want any part of that. And also, I think fishing's probably easier if you're just sitting on a bank, right? We were in kayaks and my kayak didn't go where I wanted it to go. It just kept in a mind of its own. Like, how many times did I end up under docks that I shouldn't have been anywhere near?
And then Fitz had to come along and rescue you. But I tell you, my arm is still aching because I was sat on the front of his, the paddle board.
Yeah.
And I was worried about all the equipment we had. I had my phone and I had the microphone. And, I was holding it up to him and I was worried that he was going to rock it and fall off, but he didn't, which was good.
I felt like a little bit emasculated in a way because Fitz was on this paddleboard, stood up like some kind of warrior hero, paddling down the waterways, and I'm in this little pedal boat and I can't go in the right direction at any time. But it was a lot of fun. He was great with the access. He welcomed us into his home. It was just a brilliant day.
Okay, so we have our first question from social media, Neil. It's come from Martin Lydon. And he wants to know what the biggest surprise move around the start of the new league year has been for you.
For me, it has to be the Houston Texans trading away DeAndre Hopkins. This was shocking. And sometimes, Gary, you'll look at these trades and you'll try and get into the fine print of them and say, okay, well, both sides won. Both sides got something out of it. But not this one. For me, it was bonkers. It just was crazy that Bill O'Brien traded away DeAndre Hopkins, arguably the best receiver in the NFL, certainly one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, for effectively just a second round draft pick. Arizona were looking to dump David Johnson's contract anyway. So Houston did them a favor taking David Johnson off their hands. So then you're saying you're giving up DeAndre Hopkins for a second round draft pick. This is a team that has a quarterback that can have them in the Super Bowl mix every year for the next 7 or 8 years. You build everything you can around Deshaun Watson. You don't take things away from him. You don't rip the rug out from underneath him. I think they've done Deshaun Watson a disservice. I think they've done Texans fans a disservice. And I think this is the danger of having your head coach also be your general manager. There should be checks and balances in place. There haven't been. Bill O'Brien's been allowed to run riot with his roster. He couldn't get along with Jadeveon Clowney, got rid of him. Couldn't get along with Dwayne Brown, got rid of him. And now he's got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. This is a bad move for the Texans and for Deshaun Watson. If I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm fuming.
Okay. Lastly, from Stuart Love, what do you think of Tom Brady joining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I'm fascinated to see Tom Brady's career encore. This is the competitive well with Tom Brady has not run dry. That's why he didn't want to retire. He couldn't work it out with the Patriots. He's had to move on. I think it's going to be fascinating to see because he has the weapons now in Tampa Bay that were missing in New England last year. We saw how much Brady struggled with no Gronk, with an injured Julian Edelman, with no wide receivers. Now he's got Mike Evans, one of the best wide receivers in the game. Chris Godwin is a dynamic wide receiver. Two very good tight ends in O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate.
a good running back in Ronald Jones. It's worth remembering this offense was ranked third in the NFL last year, with Jameis Winston throwing 30 interceptions and having at least another 20 dropped. Jameis Winston could conceivably have thrown 50 interceptions last year, and this was still the third ranked offense in the NFL. So Brady, working with Bruce Arians, the head coach, Arians has coached Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer. Can he squeeze one last run out of Tom Brady? It might not happen, but it's just fascinating to see, the same way with so many, Joe Namath, Brett Favre, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, Johnny Unitas, all these greats of the game ended their careers in these weird looking uniforms that didn't suit them because they'd played for so long for so many other teams. We're going to see that now with Tom Brady. And I'm just fascinated to see if he can thrive away from Bill Belichick. He's certainly got the weapons in Tampa Bay.
So that's the end of the show there, Neil. First one in the bag. If people want to feature in this section of the show, ask Neil, how do they do it?
Best way is on Twitter. That's where I spend most of my social media time. So hit me up at Neil Reynolds NFL. That's it for episode one. The Neil Reynolds podcast will be back in 2 weeks with a very special guest in Bruce Arians, head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're running shows every fortnight between now and the start of the new NFL season. The podcast will then switch to weekly shows throughout the 2020 campaign. So stay tuned for more insight and anecdotes from some of the NFL's biggest names. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.